Blog Talk Radio.
This is a Razor Edge production, Oneness Mobility Show. It's showtime, and here's our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
Greetings, and welcome to Oneness Mobility, where they work wonders. I am your co-host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our host and star of the show and owner, Mr. Bob Alfred, is having a medical procedure yesterday, so he, with that very white voice, won't join us today, but me and the hostess with the most, Miss Renee, will carry on, and hopefully the three things that we always say we like to have you take away is, one, to be informed, be inspired, and be entertained. So we're going to see if we can do that in the next hour. So greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Well, Reverend Ray, I haven't been outdoors, but somebody told me it feels like a summer day out there. So I'm folding up my sweatshirts and my sweaters, and I'm getting ready for an early spring, because that's what
Phil said
we were going to have an early spring. So, you know, when, you know, now we're listening to rodents to tell us what time, what the spring is coming. So I'm folding up sweaters and sweatshirts, sir. I believe him.
Okay. Well, I know I've been out, and I took my Miss Raven, my guide dog, out, and it was warm out there. I had on a jacket, and I was like, my goodness, this is the kind of weather that will get you sick. If you fold them up, don't leave them. You better take them with you, though, because you might be putting that right back on next 2 days or 3 days. Unusual weather. But, yeah, so as I say, this Oneness Mobility radio show that's heard here every second and third Friday of the month. And as I say, our host and star, Mr. Bob Alfred, won't be with us today, so we want to keep him in prayer. But we're going to talk about Ms. Renee has some business things that we're going to talk about. But just before we get to that, Ms. Renee, they say anything you're working on, a project or something, they say go slow but learn fast. So so one of the and I read another book on Mike Murphy. A lot of people know him. He's an evangelist, a minister that comes on television, and he's one of the success ministers. And one of the seven things that he say that you need to do is feed your mind. You should always be reading, reading, reading. And I love to read. Sometimes I just read the things that really don't feed my mind. They might blow my mind. but I'm trying to mix that up a little bit, and I don't think I ever read. I think years and years I kept saying I'm going to read The Miseducated Negro about Carter G. Woodson. So I have started reading that, and that book was a classic in 1933 when he wrote it. And Ms. Renee, you know, I think the book is a read about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. But I'm telling you, I'm halfway through the book, and he talk about, you know, politics that Negroes got in with, to say blacks now, talked about the education going through the school system, talked about politics, talked about theater careers and acting and stuff. And I'm telling you, it's almost like much has not changed. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's in the black community, it seems like much has not changed. And one thing with my disclosure that those who listen, that I on the staff for Prince George's County at large, than Mr. Calvin S. Hawkins. And okay, that's a nice weekend. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. All righty. That's the one letting me know that I will be here left alone, so I need to look around and watch out. But anyway, so getting back to that I work in the council, and Prodigy Woodson was saying about how, Ms. Renee, you know, I don't know, at one time when they would have elections and all, you know, we all know how they would give black people these hard questions, you know, and stuff. But then they would give, you know,
the
whites
polling
less,
questions.
The polling questions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they would ask them to, you know, interpret the Constitution, all kind of stuff. But then the less learned white folks, they would give them easy questions. And also they intentionally did not put the Constitution or the Declaration or any a Bill of Rights or anything like that in the paper. They say, no, don't do it because black people might read it and start wanting their rights and understanding what their rights are. I mean, so,
wow.
I tie that in to say, now we have the opportunity to learn about your government, you know, and because they have put out, you know, don't get into politics, you know, because it's dirty, you know. But politics is what the decisions are made to give you good neighborhoods, get your trash picked up, give you good schools and all. And so even today, you know, they still use that deterrent. Saying, you know, don't get into politics, it's dirty. I mean, they can't now hide that you can get a book and read the Constitution. You can get a book and read Declaration of Independence. You can, you know, in your town or your city, you can go there. But if people constantly telling you don't get involved in politics because it's dirty, then it becomes subliminal and you start internalizing. And also, Prodigy Woodson a number of times said that that the whites in the education, the white education, felt that if they could control your mind, they could control your action. And the so-called educated Negroes, where they have been so institutionalized that what they learn, that's what they teach back, which is not, you know, good for the Negro, the black race. So it's just fascinating to read that and see that things have not changed that much in terms of, you know, how we have just been so indoctrinated, you know, through so many different things, so many different ways that we have not, some of us have seen the light, like George Frazier, you know, they say he probably wrote the best networking book. He said, you know, 85% of the people, they dead. They just walking around. They just haven't laid down yet. And then there's another 10% that's looking to be enlightened. And then it's that 5% that's enlightened, and they just have to find the 10% to train them. So we have some work to do. So anyway, tell me what you have scheduled for today.
Well, you know, I think it's really important what you're saying about being educated, because just like you mentioned the book, Miseducation of the Negro, you know, we think we've read it, but when we really examine that we haven't, and, you know, now there's a plethora of information that people can get. I remember going to the library, walking with my girlfriend, and it was quite a ways away to go and pick up books and come back, and we could keep the books for 2 weeks. And because we live so far away, oftentimes we our books were overdue. But the point was that we had the books and we were able to educate ourselves. you put me in mind of a story about the astronaut, a black astronaut by the name of Ronald McNair. He was an American astronaut with NASA, and he was also a physicist. And he died early in the launch of the space shuttle. But what I find significant is in his small town, and I can't recall the name of it, but you can look up his name, Ronald McNair. He read all of the books in the library, in his local library, and the librarian stopped him from reading certain books. Now, I don't know how he read the rest of them, but he proceeded to read all of them, and he went on to finish school and study aeronautics and all the things that you study to become an astronaut. But ironically, the library in his small hometown is now named after him.
He's black, you say.
He's black. And to circle back on what you're saying, when there is a will, there is a way. I think now we're not interested in doing the extra steps that it might take to educate ourselves. You know, now we can open our computers. Almost everybody has a computer. Almost certainly everybody has a phone. I mean, whoever thought we would have a computer on our hip, but young kids have it.
Yeah.
So access to information is not denied us. What is denied and what we have to channel is our choices of what we bring into our bodies and our minds. That's the difference. So, you know, sitting down and reading a book of the miseducation of the Negro, or reading a whole series of books in the library that aren't anime or cartoons or something, it's a decision that has to be guided by parents, adults, educators. So we have some work to do. We have some work to do, but it's possible, because I just saw the other day where some 17-year-old got her PhD. There are people out here, Reverend Ray, that are learning and that are moving along, and we're either going to move along with them or we're going to be left. But that sort of segues, go ahead.
Yes. No, go ahead.
But that sort of segues into what we were going to talk to Bob about. He did have a minor surgical procedure, and his last words to me, or not his last words, his words to me yesterday were, I will be on. If not, I will be at 12 o'clock. But, you know, here again, when we go in for what doctors, and it used to bug me, they call minor procedures. To me, if they're going to put me to sleep, it's not minor. It's important.
Right.
And so, and he may not be feeling the best. But what we were going to talk about is business. And, you know, people come into the business world many different ways. Some people study it in school, business administration, business, take business courses, et cetera, et cetera. And other people evolve or fall into business and find out that they really love it. There's so much autonomy, so much independence that you have with going into business. So if you are amenable, sir, I think we will play with the idea of businesses and maybe some lessons you've learned. You were a business person for a really long time, and I came into business late in life, but there are some lessons that I learned and some lessons that I wish I had learned earlier and valued business for what it was. So, Reverend Ray, we're right up against the break. So we'll do our break now, and then we'll come back, and I will pepper you very gently with the questions prepared for host Bob Alfred. You are listening to the Oneness Mobility Radio Show, where getting you back on the road is our goal. And we are heard here every second and third Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you just tuned in, you've learned that our co-host, Bob Alfred, is under the weather after having a minor procedure. He thinks he's part Superman, so he probably did think he could have a procedure today and be on the show at 3 o'clock. But that speaks volumes to the kind of person he is. But Reverend Ray, you went into business at a certain age, and what had you thought about business beforehand, or was it just the right time at the right place, or just making the most of an opportunity that fell into your lap?
Okay. One correction that because Bob gets the big bucks, he is his title on the show is the star and the host. I'm the co-host. So
gotcha.
When we take these checks to the bank, we know who getting what. So anyway, in terms of a business, Ms. Renee, because I was blind, and they has a program called the Randolph Shepherd Act, where a senator and a congressman, a U.S. congressman, and the U.S. senator, they got together. I can't remember who's Randolph and who's Shepherd, and they came up with a program specifically for the blind to have a snack bar or sell newspapers and pencils in a location within the federal buildings, and some states could have them in their state building. They funded this program. And of course, time evolved where people would, eat breakfast at home, then go to work. Well, they would take their lunch to work, brown bag it. And so only thing they were then was buying probably was, a newspaper, something like that, or pencil or something. But as our lifestyle changed and people started going to work earlier, then the snack bars had to become, like a cafeteria, a deli. They had to start selling breakfast. And then as people, was making a little more money economically, they decide, I don't want to take a brown bag that don't look professional, as they become white-collar workers. So they wanted to buy their lunch. So then that means the snack bar newsstand then had to start selling lunch. So that grew. And then people was like, they're working late in the evening. And also, they want to grab a snack or something around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. So the snack bars became, almost full-blown cafeterias and all, which you can make a very, very good living. So when I came out of school, I had a friend that was in the Randolph Shepherd program, and he had his own facility, and he invited me down, and he said, Raymond, you should really look at this opportunity. And they say, well, you don't have to learn a whole lot. They'll teach you for about 3 months or 4 months and then put you, on job training with someone like myself. He was a vendor. And then they'll give you a facility. They stock it. They find a location for you, because it's a government program. You don't have to pay rent. And they stock it for you. And so it's basically like a turnkey operation. And so, I spent a few days with him. I said, okay. And I applied for the training, took the training in 1971, right after I got out of school. And then 3 months later, I was had my own business.
Well, this is the question I have to ask you. That sort of fell in your lap. Here again, when you talk early in the show about go slow, learn fast, all kinds of people can teach us lessons. And my question is, had you ever thought about business prior to that exposure?
Well, no. And one of the things that Carter G. Wilson talked about when it came to business and black people was that because we was not exposed, we didn't have family members that had businesses. So we didn't think in terms of business. And when we did think in terms of business, we didn't get the proper training, especially like, you take a plumber, you take a, they, white people didn't give black people the opportunity to become apprentice. You know, in the white community, they set up apprenticeship, you know, but they didn't do that for the blacks. So even with my training, I didn't get the proper training of what a businessman was like. I basically got the training that I employee, what an employee do, you know, everything was set up for me. I didn't get the training how to go and negotiate, looking for a location. And then after I found the location, what the finances I need to do to secure this location and how much I need to pay, you know, a month. And once I got the location, how to build it out in terms of, you know, what's going to go where, what type of equipment I need. So I didn't get that training. And I go back again to College G. Wilson's points that out. So therefore, I was really set up, you know, for failure. I wasn't a businessman. I was an employee. And, you know, and that just bears out that I understood that, later on in life. No, I did not know
that
then.
I wanted to ask you, did you know that then? Okay, okay.
No.
And, you know, I think it's important because no program, job, entity is what it is going to become, is what it evolves to that. One of the things is that persons who were blind or low vision did not have a way of making a living. And so while the Randolph Shepherd might have been embryonic in launching business owners, it was a start because it was so much more dignified for a person who was blind and may have had a family or responsibilities to own and operate a small business on federal government property than to stand and sell pencils or some other low-level demeaning, demeaning kind of effort to sustain themselves. You know, we think of all of these government programs, Social Security, public assistance, TANF, they call it in certain places. A lot of those programs did not exist. And so while Randolph Shepherd was flawed, it was a stepping stone to give blind and low vision people a way of making a living. And many of them took that, as did you, took that first step and created businesses. They built upon that embryonic training. Had that been your experience?
Well, it has been. And you know, and let me say this. When the program started out in 1936, it really was like they was training professional panhandlers, you know, because they didn't think it's really serious as a business, but they was training us, so we were so-called professional, but we still was, you know, panhandling. They did not have any idea that, society was going to move in the direction that it went from, you know, agriculture, to industrial, to informational, you know, industry. Now for me, again, because I wasn't exposed to a business community, I just conducted myself as 90-some percent of vendors, blind vendors did, as an employee, you know, at the cash register, working the cash register, putting up shoulders, putting up, you know. So we was working in the business, whereas a business man owner that actually becomes an owner, they understand you work on the business. And on the business is advertising your business, belonging to trade unions, learning about different systems and that kind of thing. Now, some people, because they came up at blind persons, either new family that had businesses or new friends that had businesses, you know, they was like, oh, hey, I can help you turn this into, you know, parlay it into another business because you have this Randolph Shepherd license, you know, where you could get things at a nominal fee and machines, free machines, soda machines, and, you know, and all that kind of thing. So they did turn it into that. But here again, as Carlos B. Wilson said, the training, you know, and of course, most of them was white that did understand that they could leverage that business and grow other, you know, personal businesses. But in the black vendors, you know, we were just so happy being an employee, our own self-employed, coming to work and running the cash register when, you know, the socialness of just being there. We were so happy. We didn't get, and got, you know, decent money every week and to take care of our basic needs. So we didn't think beyond. We didn't have a vision beyond being an employee and being a business owner. And it took me years, basically even after I got out the program, to understand the difference.
And, you know, I think that that's a really important point to make. But it is an evolution when you haven't been exposed to that. I think about the small town where I grew up, and there were people who worked for themselves, and they were the anomaly. They were not typical. Most of the men in my small town worked in the steel mill, or they worked at Ford Motor Company, or they worked at the gypsum plant. They worked for somebody. However, mm-hmm. the people that worked for themselves, and many of them were, they built houses, they were in construction, plumbing, that kind of thing, and many of them, because of race, could not get into the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They couldn't get into mm-hmm. the plumbing unions. And so they were small businesses. However, they were the persons we looked up to because their money was not dependent on anybody else but their own efforts. And I look back at it now and I realize they were the middle class people in our neighborhood. They were the ones who did not seem to be concerned when there wasn't a contract between the union and management at Ford Motor Company. They were not the ones that were concerned about whether or not they were going to shut down one of the facilities at U.S. Steel. So I look back on now and I realize the lessons that they were offering that many of us were so programmed to work for someone, we could not imagine being in a free fall as a private business owner.
And Ms. Renee, that's where the book and the title came out of Carter G. Wilson, is the miseducated Negro. Because, like you say, you know, other people couldn't see that they needed to think different and learn a business. You know, they have been trained and taught to work, you know, as an employee. And so that's where the is that time to take a break?
It is. But finish your thought.
All right. I say, so that way the miseducation come when you don't think out the box and go beyond, you know, where you are as just an employee or a label person and not think in the term, the mindset of becoming a owner, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you pointed out, this is the music, which means it's time for a station break. And we're going to take this station break and we're going to come right back and talk about being a business owner and the difference between being a business owner and an employee and whether or not you can make that quantum leap to to becoming a business owner, thinking like a business owner. So you are listening to the Oneness Mobility Radio Show, where getting you back on the road is the number one goal. We are heard here every Friday. I'm sorry. We are heard here every second and third Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you may have noticed that the mellifluous voice of our host and star of the show is absent today. Bob Alford, the owner of Oneness Mobility, or the co-owner of Oneness Mobility, is absent after having a minor procedure at the hospital. And so in his stead, our co-host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, is sharing his experience of going from being initiated into business and realizing that there was a big difference between being initiated into business and becoming an authentic business owner. So Reverend Ray, after you had this exposure and you had you realized that there was a chasm between being creating a job for yourself and being a business owner, did you start taking classes or do anything to educate yourself to position yourself to be a more insightful business owner?
No, Ms. Renee, because here again, the miseducation. I was, making a good living and all, so I didn't see any reason for being different. I didn't belong to a think group. I didn't belong to a trade union, anything like that where we had meetings and talked about where the industry was going and the news. I mean, so I was just employed. So I never thought in terms of that. And this is one of the things that Carla G. Woodson pointed out, that we don't get the kind of training that we need. And we purposely don't get it because those other people that's in charge don't want us to think that we, can get in charge. And it's just like the entertainment industry that blacks, I want to bring this up, but with entertainment industry with blacks, if you notice, they'll say, black person, they just feel that we have natural talent, right? And so because they feel that way, we don't get the proper training. We don't get the training. Yeah, there was, there are black people that's naturally funny, like a Richard Pryor. There are black people that can naturally dance. What if they understood that, okay, you still need to go get this type of training? You still need to get, and we don't go beyond that where maybe a Debbie Allen, then one person, out of how many hundreds of black people that understood, I'm not going to be able to dance forever. I might be a good dancer, so I got to go create this business. And enough of us don't talk to each other or come together to understand that. So if I had a couple of, blind vendors that was black or white, came to me and said, hey, you could take this to another level if you want to. And it was up to me to go and take some evening courses at one of the community colleges and business courses and understood that, I could parlay this position into something special and giving back, that I could create jobs for other my family and other people. But that wasn't the mindset that we was trained when we was training for this program, and that hasn't changed.
Well, that was my question. Is you say it hasn't changed? Do you think with just exposure, and I'm talking about exposure to internet, exposure to other small business successes, that people now realize how to parlay that into something more, that they're getting training, that they are coming together as a group and learning what is working in certain federal buildings and what's not working and what's the new growth market. Do you think that that has changed from when you first came into the industry?
Unfortunately, Ms. Renee, it has not changed. Maybe one or two people that they was entrepreneurial spirit in the first place, and this just gave them the leverage to be able to go on and do, you know, other things that, you know, that they want to do, you know. But in terms of the training, the training that you get do not prepare you or encourage you to go on beyond that. And if you're making a pretty good money where you can take care of your basic needs and, you know, and beyond your basic needs, to have a house, to travel, to, you know, do some of those things where, and you don't have a vision, or you don't have a calling, or you don't have a personal mission in life, then there's no need for you to go evening when you make good money, when you can already pay your bills. What is the point of, you know, going to school in the evening if you don't have a, like I say, you don't have a mission, you don't have a calling, you don't have a vision or something? Then you know, you are satisfying what 90-some percent of the people want to do, have a job where they make enough money to take care of, you know, their basic needs, and every now and then be able to go on a vacation, or, you know, go out to party, or buy something special they might like, you know, a nice car, something like that. But if you don't have, like I say, beyond that, if you haven't been inspired to create something for other people, and that's what it comes down to, because once you start making money or having success beyond your needs, then it has to be that you're doing it for other things. And it could be people, places, or things, you know. But if you don't have a passion to be able to give back, then there's no need, if you already have sufficient income to care you and your family, then you're not going to put any more skin in the game, because you want to enjoy, you know, what you have right then. So you're not looking to go to school in the evening, go to meetings during the daytime, and put that kind of time in if you don't have a ultimate mission, vision, calling.
You know, Reverend Ray, I think there's also an added component to that. I was with some high school, this is many, many years ago, I was with some high school kids, and we were all just talking about things that we wanted to do when we grew up. And Chuck, because he might be listening to this show, I don't want him to know who he is, but Chuck talked about being a business owner. And all the mm-hmm. rest of us were talking about getting good jobs in the mill. And Chuck was talking about being a business owner. Now, we didn't know what kind of business he wanted, but he always talked about business. And I remember thinking to myself, Chuck's family's going to starve to death because you can't make any money like that. I mean, that was my small thinking, because I had been acculturated to believe that you got a job. Now, the mill wasn't the top of the heap unless you could become a supervisor or a foreman or something. Mm-hmm. But still, mm-hmm. all of the roads led back to that. I want to put a point in that, and then I want to come back to something. A few weeks ago here in the DMV, that's the District, Maryland, and Virginia, we had a snowstorm, 3 or 4 inches of snow. Now, for our area, that was quite a bit of snow. And so the complex where I live, they came and they cleaned the snow off the sidewalk, basically. But there still were some places where an industrious young man or woman could have come and made plenty of money taking removing snow from somebody's car or digging them out in between, because the industrial ones left big mounds of snow that turned to ice, and you really couldn't navigate that. And so someone said, well, where are all the young boys and girls that used to shovel the snow? And we said, that doesn't happen anymore. And it doesn't, because we haven't taught young people to be industrious. You know, we talk about secondary education as college, but we haven't taught them to work hard before they get there. And working with your hands is an honorable profession, although we and many in the Western culture and nature, we now believe that if you're not an intellectual, then your work is not valued. You're not valuable. So I think we need to have a leveling of the playing field. So we talk about all of us working together and learning that if somebody decides that they're going to go into business, whether it's HVAC or any other kind of business, that is as honorable a profession as for somebody who is an educator or does some other white collar. I mean, even the names, white collar and blue collar. You know, when you think of white, you think of purity and good and fabulous. And when you think of blue, it's like, oh, okay, it's blue. But just the language that we use and our attitude toward if you meet a kid now who's in high school and you ask them, what do you want to do when you leave school? And they go, I don't know. I think maybe business, or I might be an entrepreneur or something like that. People immediately have a shock value. It's like, no, you must go to college. I think you made a point earlier, and I think it's important. Carter G. Woodson didn't write that book as a definitive. He wrote it as a way to get people to begin to think about how do we make a complex society with everybody. We need everybody to do the different kinds of things. I hear what you're saying. What would you tell a young person? And even though you learned some of your lessons later on and you have talked about reading and self-education, what would you tell a young person now who's not sure what they want to do after they graduate high school?
Well, before then, I would tell them to get a mentor, get in some kind of program that has a mentor, a mentor aspect to it, and get you a mentor, somebody in. And if you have any inkling of, you know, what you might want to be, then you find a mentor, or you approach a mentor that does that. You'd be surprised of the people that's professional and successful. You'd be surprised at how many of them would love to take the knowledge that they have for don't ever be lost when they die, and take on proteges. It's just that we don't ask them because we just think they're so unapproachable. Oh no, they would never do that for me. So another thing, this is something called success. One of the power things is called the power of two. And what the power of two means, you can meet one person in your life, the right person can change your whole life, okay? I mean, so say you was in the elevator and met Oprah Winfrey, and you had 30 seconds to tell her, you know, your mission or your calling. And she said, and she was just so impressed. And she said, you know what? After y'all got 30 seconds down and getting out, she said, no, you come on with me. You come on with me. What you said was interesting. Come on with me. Go out and get in her, stretch limousine. And she said, no, I want to talk to you more about this. And I'm going to put, and that's only just one person that can change your whole life. And they call that the power of two. But you have to be aware of what's around you. And when you're talking to somebody, you know, you think about not so much how that person can benefit you, but how that person and you can work together.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Excellent advice. Well, you know what the music means. It means that it's time for our break. So you are listening to the Oneness Mobility Radio Show, where getting you back on the road is our number one goal. We are heard here every second and third Friday at 3:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for those of you who have been missing Bob Alford's mellifluous voice, it's because Bob had a medical procedure that knocked him out of the host seat this week. And Reverend Ray has graciously stepped into the void so that we can go on with our program. And Reverend Ray, I think you made such a great point about asking people to mentor you, but also being prepared emotionally and intellectually. You know, the whole this whole conversation started with a book by Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro, and there also is an album out. There's an album. It's old now. But it was the Miseducation by the Fugees, I believe it was. But again, we go to school, but education does not take place only between 9 and 3. Education is what you watch on television. Education is what you read. Education is who you are around. All of that is part of our education, and we believe that it is, many of us believe, we can't say everybody does anything, but many of us believe that the job of the school is to educate us. And it really isn't. It takes place at home, in the home, how you learn to eat at a dinner table. I had a young person who had been invited to dinner, and she said that her grandmother, a voice, and kept coming to her every time she would pick up her fork. Put your hand in your lap. Use your fork. Use your knife to cut your food. Don't talk with food in your mouth. All of those things, she said, made her so nervous. But when she went to this event, she felt comfortable because at least she'd been exposed. She knew what she should do and what she shouldn't do. So our education is not just in school, it's not just in books, but all of us. You know, there's an African proverb that says that we are part of a village. And now that we all live in our little cocoons in the suburbs, and we don't have Miss Hattie down the street watching you as you come home and see you with the wrong people and calling your mother and saying, I don't think she should be playing with that person. We have lost something in our community. We have truly lost something in our community. So education is so much broader than just being in school. It is reading books. It is being around people who correct you. Because there was a time that Miss Sadie could correct, and you knew you'd better straighten up and do what you were supposed to do because Miss Sadie had the authority. That fact that she was an elder in the community to make sure that you were doing the right thing. And where did we lose that, Reverend Ray?
We lost it with other people giving us their values. And this is what Carter G. Woodson was saying, that, you know, that we are being trained by these schools and all that giving us what they think we should have and what we shouldn't have, because even now there's a large segment of the population, and you know that from, you know, that they wanting this former president to become president again, that really feel that, you know, black people should not be, you know, not be free, and they should be appreciative that that they can even exist. I mean, they still, unfortunately, you know, feel that way. So, you know, in the black churches, they have done something, but it's more that they need to do and not stay in their own little, you know, fiefdom. But before we go any further, I want to give the contact information for Oneness Mobility, because the Oneness Mobility Services sponsored this program. And after I give the contact information, Ms. Renee, just get your thoughts together. I would like you to give what Oneness Mobility Services are, what they do. So Oneness Mobility, and that's Oneness is O N O-N-E-S-S Mobility, Oneness Mobility. And they are located at 7913, that's 7913 Crident, and that's C-R-Y-D-E-N, Crident Way, and that's in District Heights, Maryland. And their phone number is 301-568-6686. Again, their number is 301-568-6686. And you can just call them or drop by. And Mr. Bob Alfred and his better half, Miss Pat, will be glad to assist you and serve you. So, Mr. Renee, can you give us a synopsis of what this company does?
Well, I can. Oneness Mobility, their goal goal is to get you back on the road. Now, there are lots of reasons that we're unable to continue to drive. It might be a disability. It might be an accident or anything that can impede our being able to use an automobile in a traditional way. And what Bob Alfred does is he can replace, enhance anything that needs to be adjusted so that you can get back on the road. It starts as simple as swivel seats, easier to get in and out. If Mr. Arthritis meets you early in the morning, you know that sometimes those joints are a little bit stiff, and it might be a little bit harder to get in and out of your vehicle, but everything else is fine, and so you need a little enhancement there. It might be that you have had a disabling condition that prevents you from using the pedals. So perhaps they need to be raised so that you can use them, or you need to use hand controls. Sometimes there aren't any solutions for you continuing to drive, but once again, we talk about the challenge of getting from one place to another because not being able to move is isolating. So Bob at Oneness Mobility with his staff can drop the floors so that wheelchairs and or scooters can be accommodated. He can raise the roof, not like you did when you were in the club, but raise the roof of your vehicle so that you can get from one place to another. And, you know, we talk a lot of times about persons with disabilities using Oneness Mobility services, but something that Bob likes to point out all of the time, when you've got a football player or a basketball player, an athlete who might be taller than the average person, I think the average height in America is 5'8 for a man. Well, you've got men and women who are 6'5 and above, and trying to fold yourself into a small vehicle is not comfortable. Mm-hmm. Well, Bob can extend, he can extend this and he can do that, and he can add things and make things really comfortable. He has done that for basketball players that are over the average height and that are using a car that is built for the person with the average height. So if you have any question about being able to utilize your vehicle because of your stature, because of a disability, anything, you know, once again, call on the people at Oneness Mobility. And Reverend Ray, give that address one more time, and then I am going to give the phone number.
Okay, the address is 7913 Crident Way, and that's Crident is C-R-Y, you can cry, D-E-N, Way, District Heights, Maryland.
Well, we're right up against our break and our final break. And what that means is that we are going to end this show, but it still means that you're able to get in touch with Oneness Mobility. So we do want to thank you for listening to Oneness Mobility Show. We are heard here every second and third Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Our host and star is out because of a medical emergency today. So Reverend Ray and I stepped in to try to fill that void. And you notice we said try to fill that void. So we're going to tell you how you can hear this show again, and or how you can get in touch with Oneness Mobility. And so, Reverend Ray, before I take us out, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, just to say also, you can go to Oneness Mobility website, which is onenessmobility.com. And again, that oneness is O-N-E-N-E-S-S mobility.com. And from this conversation, I would just say this, Ms. Renee, as I said earlier, that you need to go slow but think fast, and you need to read. You need to educate yourself, and as they say, you know, the five nearest people around you is what your life's going to look like. So you need to look at those five people, you know, financially, emotionally, you know, what your family look like. So you need, and you're in the beginning of the year, so, you know, so sit down and do some soul searching.
Well, you know, Rev, I just want to stop you right there. You said, look at your family. You know, we don't have any choice about our family, but our family of choice, we can do something about that. And I love the idea you're saying, look around at the people you have. If you are not with people who want to improve themselves, you are going to reflect exactly what you are around. So I love that. So don't get stuck and say, well, I have a family and they never achieved very much. Then find you a family of choice. Go out and find people who are getting things done, who care about the same things that you care about. And it will make a huge difference. Well, Rev, I'm going to close this out. Do you want to hear this show again or one of our past shows? Go to our website, revrayrazor.com. That's R-E-V. RAY.com. If you have a question about modifying your vehicle, call Oneness Mobility Services. That number is 301-568-6686. Again, that number is 301-586-6686. Or go to their website, onenessmobility.com. That's Oneness, onenessmobility.com. Well, hopefully Bob will be back in his host chair in a couple of weeks. Again, when we come back on the second Friday in March, and we will hear from him about the things that he learned founding Oneness Mobility. This has been a Razor Edge production, and this has been the Oneness Mobility Show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.